Hi, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. Ryan Ballingy, good to have you here with us. Happy pre-Thanksgiving to all of you. Hope you had a great weekend of golf. You can get a hold of me on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy, RyanBallengee. You can reach Golf News Net on your favorite social media service at the handle Golf News Net, and we are available on Amazon Fire and Roku TVs, and all of our work is available at golfnewsnet.com. We have some cool announcements to make in the coming weeks. I can't make them yet. But we have some cool new things coming, an entirely new website coming. We're not refurbishing GNN. You'll hear more about that. It's a cool surprise coming. And then some other things might be coming down the pipe, too, that we can't talk about yet, but they're very, very exciting. I do want to tell you about this one thing that's kind of a business thing, and since this is my one outlet to speak to you, to speak to anybody about anything about my life other than to my family, we have signed an agreement with USA Today Media Group, USA the Sports Media Group, and they're going to represent us in our business in terms of how they sell ads, and they'll sell ads on our behalf moving forward. And for you, that really means nothing. I mean, as a podcast listener or even a website visitor, it doesn't really mean anything to you. Experience is the same. Website's going to be the same. Podcasts are going to be the same. But it's really cool for me because after being in this now nearly 18 months, of running this business by myself as the principal owner, it's become very evident to me that selling is a difficult task and it requires someone who's really good at it and can devote a lot of their attention to it. And so to have the folks at USA Today, as qualified as they are, an official marketing partner of the PGA Tour helping us out on that, it's a huge deal. I think we're going to put out a press release later, but been excited about it. It's been signed and sealed for a couple weeks now, and so just wanted to let you know about that. I also wanted to spend a few minutes before we got into the crux of this show, which is a mailbag show. First ever in the history of the show, dating back to, I think, 2002, maybe 2000, I think it's 2002, the first year we did the show. Never had a full mailbag show, so we're going to do a mailbag show. But I wanted to start with just a few minutes on what a great weekend this was for golf. I mean, really good. I mean, this whole PGA Tour wraparound portion of the season, and really a lot of this year, has been about comebacks. I mean, guys who have knocked off multi-year, if not decade-long, waits to win again. You talk about Tiger Woods, obviously, at the Tour Championship. Phil Mickelson overcame a nearly five-year drought at the WGC Mexico. Kevin Na won the Greenbrier. I forget how long his wait was, but it was something like 6 years. Webb Simpson overcame a long wait when he won the Players' Championship. And then in this fall series, we had some waits overcome, so to speak. Kevin Tway won his first PGA Tour title, and he's been around for, 100 starts, basically, which, obviously, that's not forever, but that's several years. You had Mark Leishman, who didn't have the best 2018 portion of the season. Compared to his standards of the last couple of years, he broke through, even though that wasn't nearly as long of a wait. And then you had some really nice runs over on the European Tour. Sergio Garcia winning again. He owns Valderrama, so maybe it makes sense that he won there. And then you had Lee Westwood, I think it was, 64, 63, on Sunday in South Africa to win for the first time in a long time. He probably felt like that day might never come again. He thought about that. And then you had, on the LPGA this weekend, you had Lexi Thompson winning, hopefully exercising, a lot of demons, not only from the past year, which has been incredibly difficult on her personally. She's had basically what borders on a mental breakdown because of the pressure that she's been under as the leading American golfer, the face of the LPGA, at least the American face of the LPGA, which she has gone through personally. In her mother battling cancer, and she's dealt with body image issues all these years and has never really told anyone about it, because who do you tell when you're a 22-year-old superstar multimillionaire who everyone thinks everything's great for? She had just general fatigue about golf. She's tried to realign her life to have some balance because she needs to figure out, as an early 20-something woman, who she is, and not just a professional golfer. And she's never really been able to do that. And it seems like maybe she's starting to make that a priority in her life, which I think is great. And she overcame just the litany second-place finishes she had in the last 24 months, but particularly last year. A lot of close calls and just wearing her down. And of course, the ANA inspiration, the whole incident with the four-shot penalty in the final round, that was just a debacle for everybody. But we kind of forget that in all of that, Lexi Thompson, while she did break the rule, was the person who was penalized here. She was the person under the microscope, and she probably called into question her credibility, her integrity, her worth as a player. And to come back at this tournament, the CME Group Tour Championship, which next year, by the way, will have the biggest regular season purse, regular non-major purse on the LPGA, to be $5 million. And they've changed the race to the CME Globe to the point now that the CME Group Tour Championship will have a smaller field, so I think it's 64 instead of 72 players next year. And whoever wins it, they win $1.5 million in one fell swoop. You don't have to win the points race. If you qualify for the Tour Championship, then you have a chance to win $1.5 million in a single day. So if this happens a year from now, Lexi Thompson would have won a $1.5 million first place purse, which is enormous in women's golf and, frankly, golf in general, because there aren't that many paydays. I mean, about half the paydays on the PGA Tour aren't $1.5 million or more. And so that's a big deal. And it would have taken away if this happened next year, or does happen next year. Arya Jutanugarn would not have won the race to the CME Globe and the $1 million that she got for having the best season on the LPGA. She became the first player to sweep the Vare Trophy, which is their scoring average trophy. She won the money list. She went to the race to the CME Globe. She won Player of the Year, something called the Legends Top 10 list. She basically won every single season-long / postseason honor there is on the LPGA this year. That's how good she was. That's how good she's been. And after a little bit of a down year in 2017, she has really come back with a vengeance. It's pretty cool to watch. And then meanwhile, over here stateside, we had the RSM Classic finishing up, and I'll come back to that in a second. But before that happened, and before Lexi's win happened, over in Dubai, the United Arab Emirates, Danny Willett won for the first time since the 2016 Masters. He won the season-ending DP World Tour Championship. He won $1.33 million from the $8 million per 60-guy field. The best of the best of the European Tour, minus Justin Rose, who decided not to play. But everyone else is pretty much there. And for him, down the stretch, I think he made, three birdies in the final four holes or something like that. Something like that. Had a great, great finish. And his tee shot into 17, where he hit basically a 208-yard shot to 7 feet with it all on the line, make a birdie, give himself a cushion to go to 18. He decides to try to do the smart thing off the tee on the closing par 5 at Jumeirah, the Earth course there, the Jumeirah Golf Estates. And there's I hate Greg Norman's par 5 designs, but there's a hazard that bisects the fairway, trying to be cute, trying to be safe, hits a less than driver. I think he hit a hybrid. What does it do? Ends up on the edge of the hazard. Unbelievable. Fortunately, it stayed up. He was able to put a club on it, advance it over the hazard, get on in 3, 2-putt, win the tournament. And I just loved seeing that, seeing the emotion from him, seeing what it meant for him to, in a way, validate winning a major. I don't think you ever have to really validate winning a major. You won. That's it. But for a guy who won his major championship on the back of another guy's collapse, as history will tell it, even though he played a great weekend at Augusta there, and certainly the final round, 67, was unbelievable given the conditions. Nonetheless, it'll be always perceived that it was just Jordan Spieth's meltdown that gave it to Danny Willett. And so for him, this was as much of a validating win because he won. He took the trophy, even though he's going to be an accomplished golfer. He's been on the comeback trail here basically throughout 2018. He's working with Sean Foley. Good things are happening for him. He's among other people he's working with. But he really reorganized his game, really got back together over the course of the summer. And you can kind of see the progress. I've tipped him a couple of times in our website picks for the European Tour. It hasn't quite come out yet, and we didn't tip him this week. And, of course, he pulls it off. But we kind of saw this coming, and it's so glad for him that it worked out. Seems like he's a well-liked guy, really appreciated on the European Tour. And then Francesco Molinari capped off a dream season, perhaps a Player of the Year season, with winning the race to Dubai when Tommy Fleetwood did not win the DP World Tour Championship. Even though he gave it a good run, just couldn't get there on Sunday, and really wasn't there all weekend, but definitely could not get there on Sunday. So then we come back to the RSM, and you've got Charles Howell III, who has a 54-hole lead. He's one up on Cameron Champ and Jason Gore, going to the final round at Sea Island. You're like, there is no way Charles Howell III wins. Absolutely none. Just not going to happen. He won basically 12 years ago, 11 years, 9 months ago. He won in a playoff at Riviera, beat Phil Mickelson in the playoff, what was then the Northern Trust, and that was his second PGA Tour win. You kind of figured it was going to be his last PGA Tour win, despite the fact that he holds the PGA Tour record for most consecutive seasons with at least $1 million earned. I think it's at 18 now. I guess it'll go to 19 now that he's won. And he gets into this early situation, 3 over through 2. You're like, all right, it's over. Now we can worry about Cameron Champ, 2-time PGA Tour winner, future terror of golf. And then come the back nine, Hal turned it back on. It was almost like he probably figured it was lost. And he had several birdies down the stretch in the final 5 holes, got himself into a 72nd hole situation where he had a look to win. I mean, I think it was a 22-footer to win outright. Just missed, just short. Goes to a playoff with Patrick Rogers. Patrick Rogers, who has not been able to win yet as a professional on the PGA Tour, even though he was arguably Stanford's most prolific winner this side of Tiger Woods. I mean, he was Stanford's most prolific winner this side of Tiger Woods when he came out. This hasn't done it yet on the PGA Tour. Gets into a situation with Howell III, and you figure, okay, well, he's going to choke it away. Howell's terrible in playoffs, I think 1-4 career going into the day. And you figure, okay, Patrick Rogers is going to be a winner. And sure enough, it didn't happen. It didn't happen. On the second playoff hole, Charles Howell III made a birdie from about 15, 16 feet. And I was driving back from a weekend trip for the family. I was listening to SiriusXM PGA Tour radio, and just, I was driving and with my wife next to me and kids watching DVDs in the back, and did a fist pump. I was so happy for Charles Howell III. I mean, I've interviewed him once or twice in my travels over the years. Always enjoyed talking to him. First class guy, just a guy you really appreciate. And he is the model of what a PGA Tour player hopes to be. He hopes to be consistent. Winning's a bonus to a modern professional golfer. If you just make good money and you're a consistent player, you're looking for consistency. You're looking to be always good or always pretty good, not going through these ebbs and flows where you're horrible and then you win and save it and then you're bad again. And that stuff happens to a number of players who have maybe 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 PGA Tour wins. They just manage to stick around because every once in a while they have a really good week and the rest of the year is crap. And that's not Charles Howell III. He is consistently good. I think he's put up 100 top 10 finishes on the PGA Tour since his prior win in 2007. That streak now ends. Obviously, a nearly 4,300-day streak comes to a close. And it's just, that's a beautiful thing to me. It really is. It's pretty cool that a guy that talented got his day. And the reaction on his face when the putt dropped, and the way he went to his knees into a crouch and just head in hands, like, hey, I finally did it. How can you not like that? How can you not root for that? And as I tweeted about this, again, on PGA Tour Radio, he was speaking with Fred Albers in the post-win interview, and I'm sure they've kind of become friendly over the years because they talked like it. And Albers asked Howell III, what were you thinking before the putt that went in to win it? And he said, I was just thinking, just don't leave it short again. He had left one short in regulation, left one little short in the playoff, even though it was a downhill putt. And then he just kind of cried for a second. Like he's told himself that 1,000 times. Just don't leave this one short again. And every time he does. And this was the time he didn't. And that went in, that putt went in, meant that much to him. And not many people get to have conversations about their moments where they overcome stuff like that. Usually it's a quiet moment to yourself, or Yeah, you kind of smile a little bit, acknowledge you never really think about how big those moments are, but you've probably gone through those too. I know I have in your life where when you, if you sat down and thought about them for a few minutes, and maybe you did eventually, you realized how important it was and how big it was that you succeeded, that you did what you were supposed to do or what you had to do. And so I can empathize with Charles III, and I'm really happy for him. I'm happy that it worked out. I'm happy that he's a winner. I'm happy he's going to the Masters. He's been so close in the top 50 in the world ranking for so many years that you just figured he was cursed, and he's not. He's a PGA Tour winner again, and you have to love that. Before we get to the mailbag, I want to tell you about a new service I've discovered that's helped me and will help you make your travel life easier and more affordable. Between traveling to tournaments and destination resorts, other golf events, equipment stuff, I travel by air pretty frequently, and I almost always wind up renting a car instead of an Uber. It is just a way of life. You're carrying clubs. You have all kinds of other things. It's just easier to have a car. And it, frankly, is annoying, but it's a way of life. Of course, I'm always looking for the best rates, but it's a guessing game of where, when to look. Even though I have status and all this stuff, it's just, it's kind of tough to figure out the best rate. But I've now discovered a service that will really help me and you in the future save money on car rentals and make your vacations a little bit more affordable and enjoyable. And that's AutoSlash. AutoSlash is a free service which makes sure you get the best possible rate when you need to rent a car, even after you book. Let me explain how it works. There are two ways AutoSlash saves you money. First is when you book. AutoSlash will search all of the car rental providers at the car pickup location that you indicate to find the best deal by applying every possible coupon code available to you, either publicly, either provided by the car rental company, someone else, or afforded to you as by being a member of an organization like Costco or AAA. You might not even realize you're able to save money on a car rental, but AutoSlash knows how you can, and it goes out of the way to make sure you get the maximum discounts possible on your car rental. Then, after you book, AutoSlash will continue to look for the best rates up until the day you pick up your rental car. Rates can drop without warning. This has happened to me literally in an airport terminal as I'm about to go pick up a car before. And AutoSlash is there to make sure you're aware of better rates through the rental company you've booked or with another company offering a better rate. You can book and rebook and rebook and rebook to save you money. And that is an absolutely smart thing to do. I've done it before, as I mentioned, in Las Vegas. I was standing in line to pick up a rental car that I'd already booked. I looked it up on a different car rental service. It was $150 cheaper, canceled, went over there, and was done in 5 minutes. I got lucky. AutoSlash will find that for you, which I think is an awesome feature. In addition to helping you save big on those pay-at-the-counter rentals, those ones you book in advance without paying up, AutoSlash offers what's called slash deals for big discounts on prepaid rentals. And they're refundable up to 48 hours before picking up the car, which is huge because if you do it through a hot wire or you do it through another booking service like that, like a Priceline, you usually have to pay in advance, and if you want to change, you get screwed. You lose your money. So with this, with AutoSlash's slash deals, you can prepay, enjoy the savings, and if you need the money back for whatever reason, need to cancel, you still have 48 hours to pull it off. I think that's a great thing for everybody who rents cars. The average AutoSlash user can expect to save about 30% or more on their rental, and that's money you can use to just have more fun when you're traveling, whether that's for business, a couple extra beers after a long presentation, whether that's a round of golf in between of everything, or whether you're traveling for fun with your family, some extra money you can save, put in your pocket is always good too. So try AutoSlash for yourself. It's free, quick, and easy. Head to AutoSlash.com, tell AutoSlash your location, your travel dates, as well as your potential membership discounts, and let it work its magic. Before you know it, you will have an email in your inbox with mind-blowing rates for your rental. That's AutoSlash at AutoSlash.com. Okay, as mentioned, we are here for a mailbag show. I've done this show since 2002, for the most part, consistently through, and I don't think I've ever done a mailbag show. And I know other podcasts do it. They do them well. They're fun. They get questions. They answer them. They go through them. Everyone laughs, has a great time. I've never done one. So I wanted to do one, and a number of you obliged me on Twitter and gave me some questions to work with. So I'm going to go with the questions that you gave me in basically chronological order of how they appeared on my Twitter timeline. And I want you to know that you can also ask me questions at Ryan Ballengee on Twitter, email at Ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com, and I will answer them on the air, whether we do another one of these soon or not. But I would like to make this a monthly thing if we can. I think it'd be pretty cool. Anyhow, let's start with the questions from Ethan Zimmon, who is one of our contributors and a great dude in the local area here in the D.C. area. His question is, predictions for the match. Explain how Tiger doesn't beat Phil at least 5-4, if you dare. I don't see a universe in which Tiger does not win this. And, I mean, he's just a better player right now. He's, what, 14th, 13th in the world? Phil is not. He's in the, I think, 30s right now. He hasn't really shown anything since beating Justin Thomas in that playoff in Mexico City, which really, I feel like Thomas booted that putt, not on purpose, but he could have won that, and he didn't. And so you've got Phil, who's coming off of a horrible Ryder Cup, the whole thing with the U.S. Open this year, just trying to be as ornery as crap at 48, and he concocts this idea in April after the WGC Mexico win. Say, Tiger, the Masters, why don't we go ahead and have a pay-per-view match, and we'll make it for a lot of money. Yin? Tiger's, yeah, I mean, I get it. That's fine. I mean, I'll do it. How much money are we talking about? I think we can get $10 million. Okay. Tiger's in for $10 million. I mean, Tiger doesn't need $10 million, but he figures, oh, I could beat Phil for $10 million. I know I can do that. I'm in. So they announce this match is going to happen, and then all the details basically get forgotten until the very end, like until 2 months out. And eventually they're going to do Shadow Creek, they do this, they do that, they've got a purse, they reduce it from $10 to $9 million so the PGA Tour doesn't get upset about the $9 million first place winner-take-all purse being as much as the $10 million FedEx Cup bonus payout, even though they just bumped that thing to $15 million for next year. Anyhow, and so now you're in a position after Tiger wins the Tour Championship, was okay at the Ryder Cup, not very good. Certainly didn't help having to carry Patrick Reed. And you've got Phil, who's basically done nothing since the Ryder Cup. Just, he played Safeway, was okay. He said he's going to start playing events only he cares about and screw everybody else. And he seems really vested in this. I mean, he seems truly vested in this, in part because he probably came up with it. So he wants to make sure this goes well, right? But other than that, I think Tiger was wary at first. I think he wasn't really that interested. And then he realized, hey, I could just stomp on Phil's throat one more time on the way out the door. I'm going to do it. And once they get at Shadow Creek, which is where Tiger, by the way, has his annual Tiger Jam charity golf tournament for his foundation. I'm sure Phil's played there before. I mean, he's a betting man that's a golfer who's been in Las Vegas. But still, I just don't see a world where Phil wins. He's just not good enough right now. He hits the fairway 50% of the time. Literally 50% of the time, he hits the fairway. Now, Tiger's not that much better, but Tiger's still got a stinger, and he can still hit a 3-wood, and he can think about putting the ball in play, which he's done. He did really well in the FedEx Cup playoffs. Phil has no interest whatsoever in putting the ball in the fairway. He's going to have to at Shadow Creek. I don't care if it's a $40 million turfed over paradise. He still has to be able to put the ball in between the non-turfed areas. Keep it out the desert. I don't know if Phil's going to do that very well. And so I'm very curious what's going to happen. But I don't think Phil has really much of a chance to win this thing. I can't see it happening. 5-4 seems maybe a little strong. But I like a 3-2 win for Tiger. All right, George Burdell, who we talk every once in a while on Twitter. We talk about all kinds of different things, but every once in a while the official World Golf Ranking comes up. And so his question is, there are some rumor changes in the OWGR coming up. What would you like to see changed? I would like to see a one-year system, no OWGR recognition for ultra-small field and unofficial events, and the entire field counts toward field strength, not just the top 200. This is a great question. This is really in the weeds, by the way. I know some of you don't really care about the official World Golf Ranking, but you should. It's really important. It determines the fields for a lot of things. It determines the fields for the World Golf Championships events, which once you get in, to the World Golf Championships, it's really kind of hard to get out. Like, if you get in the top 50 in the world, it almost becomes a self-perpetuating system unless you stink. Because if you get in, you get free points at four events a year. There are free world golf rank, official world golf ranking points at all four of those things. You get into the majors, so if you make the cut, you get big points. If you get into the invitationals, you have a smaller field, so they're not 144, 156, they're 120. If they're 120, the chances of you making the cut when the cut is still the top 70 in ties are really good. You only have to be in the top two-thirds of the field to make the cut. You're in a really sweet spot. So the OWGR matters a lot. So the formula, for those uninitiated, is a rolling two-year formula. So over 104 weeks, and it changes every week. So the 104 weeks keeps moving. And it's basically determined based on the average number of points that a player earns per tournament that they played in that rolling 104-week stretch. The kicker is the points are deprecated after 13 weeks. So if you earn 20 points this week, after 13 weeks, so basically you get it for 3 months, then the points start to go down by equal increments of 91 the rest of the way. So by 191st a week until they go away at the end of 2 years. And so there have been some discussions over the years about big changes to the OWGR. People like me have talked about it, George talked about it, others have talked about it. And there are some real sticking points with the OWGR, and some of them George mentioned in his question, they're very good. First is that it's rolling 2 years. First, if you're trying to rank the best players in the world at the current moment, why do you care about something that happens 18 to 24 months ago? That doesn't determine anything. It doesn't help you at all. It doesn't help you understand who the best players are. You just get a bunch of bonus points and thank yous for winning big golf tournaments, winning those tournaments that offer the most points, which are the majors. They all offer 100. The flagship events of the respective tours, so the Players' Championship and the BMW PGA Championship, of course, the playoff events, all these fields that kind of the WGCs that bring the top players together because of free or relatively free money, and it just doesn't work. It can't be 2 years. I like that it would be a year. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with 18 months. Somewhere in there. I think 18 months is probably a step they're willing to take. I think 12 months is the right solution. And then he also mentions as a question, no official World Golf Ranking recognition for those ultra-small field and unofficial events. I'm okay with unofficial events, recognition for that, but the current standard for the OWGR to recognize a tournament has been 30 players. They have to have a minimum 30 players to get official World Golf Ranking points, unless you have been grandfathered into the system. Hence, the Hero World Challenge giving World Golf Ranking points for an 18-player field where the money is free, it's an easy golf course, and no one really cares who wins. They should not be offering World Golf Ranking points for that reason. It's the reason the tournament still exists, because you wouldn't get 18 guys to play a tournament like this with all the other good money that's out there if they weren't World Ranking points and free money. It sweetens the deal. It's why you get so many good players in that field. The Tour Championship next year should not offer official World Golf Ranking points. It's effectively a handicap tournament now, so that shouldn't count. I think you need to have a minimum field of 64 players to be able to claim some kind of official World Golf Ranking points. I think that's the minimum. I like to see it 72, but I think 64 is the right number. And that way, you tell the folks of the PGA Tour, cram it on the Tour Championship. You're giving away $15 million. World ranking points don't matter in a handicap tournament. You could also look at those kind of smaller tournaments, super small tournaments, occasionally like the European Tour and silly season. Cut those out. You're just there to make money. You shouldn't get World Golf Ranking points for those things, especially when nothing's really on the line. Great question. And then I think the field strength issue, which George mentions, is key. In determining the strength of a field of a tournament, which basically determines how many people can earn points and the max number of points to the winner, they only count the top 200 players in the world toward a field ranking strength. So if you're on a European Tour event, weak European Tour event, an Asian Tour field, PGA Tour of Australasia, Web.com Tour, all these types of fields suffer field strength because literally players that are in the field don't count to the strength of the tournament. Most of them don't. So you're basically saying those people are worthless. They could be replaced with anybody, and they don't matter. And I think that's, first of all, a slap in the face of the depth of modern professional golf. And second, it really screws up the system because it led to the creation of some other stuff that you don't really care about, but basically they're called home tour ranking points. So you give bonus points to the best players on that tour appearing on a tournament, but they may not be the best available. It's gross. Every player should count. If you're not going to do that, at least the top 400 or 500 in the world should count. I just think that's the way to be moving forward. Great question, George. Love them. One bearded golfer asked a number of questions. I'm going to try and bang through these. Is a cold Snickers the best snack at the halfway house on a warm day? I love a good cold Snickers. I love dessert. But I'm going to say beer. Beer is my thing in golf. I can have a beer. I can have a water. And I can move on with my day. Snickers, it starts to melt on your hand. And I don't like to take a lot of time. So I can get a beer quick from the pool. I can get it draft style. Take it with me in XT. Keep going. With the cold Snickers, I need a hand wipe or a towel or something. Gets all over your face, potentially. I love cold Snickers, but just not at the halfway house. After the round, warm day, absolutely. Next question. How would you know, or how well must you know someone to trust their handicap or strokes for a wager or competition? I don't trust anyone's handicap. I think everyone's full of crap, including me, on their handicap. Not that the system is bad. I just think people are imperfect. They don't enter their scores right or enough, or they enter the bad ones too much, or like me, I only enter really the good ones because the bad ones don't really help. It's a waste of time because then I'll shoot well and someone will call me a scumbag. I don't trust anybody's strokes. I hate playing in stroke competitions when it matters for something, but I do like playing with handicap strokes against my friends because most of them are mid and high handicap players. So it gives me a really good challenge knowing on pretty much every hole I got to beat them by one, if not two, to score some points. So I like that. Wood or plastic tees? That's a hard one. I like wood tees, but plastic tees last, and I don't spray my tees around. They usually just kind of stay where I hit them, and they go back just a little bit, so I can just pick them up, keep moving. So I'm going to say the plastic tees. At what amount is it no longer a friendly wager? I would say $100 probably is not a friendly wager. Probably $50 for a lot of people isn't, but I'm going to say $100. Tee off first or anchor in a scramble? Always anchor. I always want to go last. My job is almost always in a scramble to hit it as far as humanly possible and hopefully straight. So I always want to be the last guy in the scramble to go. But on the par threes, I don't mind going first because there's no point. But on par fours and par fives, I always want to go last. Almost every scramble I've ever played in. So I was like, let me put that in the fairway so Ryan can go for it. And while I appreciate that, that's just kind of the way it becomes. So I'd like to anchor. From moving on NY, who among the top players benefits most from the PGA Championship moving to May? He thinks condensing the major schedule increases the chances of a hot player winning two or three majors in a year. I agree with this take. I agree with this a lot. We have moved the major year now to April, May, June, and July instead of April, June, July, August. So now you have to look at guys that really have a good start to the year, not guys that finish well, as the guys that have the best chance to win a multiple major. So now all of a sudden, I know we just talked about Phil being on the way out the door, but Phil basically gives up on golf after June. Well, now he has a major to play in May. He could play golf like he cares in the Masters. He still cares because he wants to win the U.S. Open in June, so maybe he can play the PGA Championship well and then try the U.S. Open, even though he's obviously going to be a laughingstock there until the end of days because of what he did at Shinnecock. So I think that you're right. I think if you're the Masters winner, you kind of get to this unfortunate place in the year. You just won the biggest golf tournament in the world these days, and now you don't get to do anything on a major stage again until June. And it's in a major that really is the polar opposite of the one that you won. Now, you've got a major that's more akin to the PGA Championship in a lot of ways than the U.S. Open. I think that's great for the Masters champion. So whoever wins the Masters, I think, becomes the automatic favorite to win the PGA Championship moving forward, not only because of what they accomplished in the first major of the year, but also because of the format and the setup is going to be a lot more like what you would see at Augusta National than what you're going to see at a U.S. Open site. I love that. Tony Deere, one of our contributors, had a great question. What do you make of Rory's decision to play so little in Europe? I would say I understand. I think that the European Tour's rule that you have to be a member of the European Tour to play in the Ryder Cup is stupid. It kept out some good players, namely Paul Casey, for a number of years, because Paul Casey had to make a choice. Did he want to play where the money is and the world golf ranking points are in the United States? Or does he have to split the time? Or how does that all work? I think his choice made sense to stay, keeping in mind himself and not having to worry about a point system or whether a captain would screw him again, Monty. And he just decided to play for himself. I'm okay with Rory choosing to do that for himself in a non-Ryder Cup year. He's at this kind of crossroads in his career. When he won those two majors back-to-back in 2014, when the British Open, the PGA, the conversation was, well, how close can he get to 10? And you figure, at this rate, he could get 12. And now we're here, at least 4 years later, he still has four major wins. And he's not getting better. He still stinks at putting. He makes all kinds of changes all the time. He doesn't seem settled. He doesn't seem particularly happy with his equipment at times, no matter who he's playing or what he's doing. And so he needs to figure out this year who he's going to be. Is he going to be Rory McIlroy, one of the greatest players to ever live? Or is he going to be Rory McIlroy, one of the greatest young players who fizzled out? If I'm him, I make the choice to do that against the best competition possible, with the least amount of travel possible, go for it on the PGA Tour, see where it leaves you, then go back to the PGA Tour or European Tour in 2020. And there's literally no way Rory McIlroy is not going to be a Ryder Cup captain in his career. So that stipulation, the European Tour rules for this year among membership, that if you let your membership lapse for even a year, you can't ever be a Ryder Cup captain. That's stupid. It'll go away when the time comes for Rory McIlroy to be the Ryder Cup captain, whenever that turns out to be. More questions. Let me scroll up a little bit. From Commiss Joe Book, who did some fantasy previews for us last year, wrote the best darn Yahoo Fantasy preview there was, and then Yahoo Fantasy went away. 20 years from now, who has more majors? Tiger, Rory, Jordan, Justin, Brooks. I think it's still going to be Tiger. Of the four remaining, I would say Brooks, because he's only one away from getting to Rory, and we know he's going to win more than four, I think. Tiger's 14 is going to be really hard to get to, unless Brooks kind of sustains this run for like 5 years. He basically has to sustain this two-major-a-year pace for 7 years just to get to Tiger. That's crazy talk. No one does that. I don't think Rory's going to get much closer to 10 than he is. Jordan's about to fizzle out, I feel. Justin could get a few more. I think he could get to 4 or 5, but I don't think he's a 10-major guy. Brooks is a cyborg. He could win 10, 12, 15. And honestly, wouldn't be that surprising. He'd be incredibly boring, maybe, but not that surprising. And Tiger, I think we have to appreciate more what he's accomplished in his career, looking back at what he did. Now has 80 PGA Tour wins, 14 majors. You look at his cuts made record. You look at what he accomplished in so many tournaments. I know he doesn't have Jack's litany of second and third place finishes in majors, and that maybe in a lot of people's eyes makes Jack even better, even if you disregard the 18 versus 14 argument, where Tiger doesn't have, obviously, as many, but the competition was deeper. Jack, I mean, basically beat the same guys over and over again for 20 years, and Tiger beat a bunch of different guys over a couple different eras. Nonetheless, I still think Tiger is sound second place 20 years from now when I'm, oh my God, 55 years old. And hopefully we won't be talking about this anymore. Good question, Joe. And I think, yeah, those are sets of questions. I know I got one more, but I can't find it in my feed. And so, I'm sorry if I missed you. I forget it. I lost it in my notifications and didn't favorite it. So I have to apologize. But those were some really good questions from all of you. And I thank you for your input and for making this mailbag show a little bit of fun. We did, I think, 25 minutes worth of questions, which I would love to continue doing these, maybe do them once a month, but we'll try to make this a little bit more regular thing and have some fun with it and make it a little bit more interactive. So this week, obviously, we have the match with Tiger and Phil. That's on pay-per-view. Our Darren Bunch is going to be there in Las Vegas. He's going to cover the whole thing for us. He's got press conference duty on Tuesday. We'll have reports on Golf News Net from that. We'll talk about that in the podcast after Thanksgiving. Please make sure to check golfnewsnet.com, not only for updates on the match, but also for all of your Black Friday deals. We have done this over the last several years and really enjoy cobbling together all the ways you can save a lot of money on your golf on Black Friday, Cyber Monday, and throughout the holiday season. And then we'll start up the 18 days of golf as well. So really, really excited to get to that part of the year. In part because there's not a lot of golf, but also in part because who doesn't love the holidays? I love Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year and just kind of taking a little break from everything, looking back on the year that was. So we will come back after Thanksgiving with a podcast about the match. And we'll talk a little bit about maybe some of the Aussie stretch too, the Aussie Open with Abraham Answer. We've got the Aussie PGA this week. And we'll talk a little bit more about that as well with the World Cup of Golf coming up. So until next time, I'm Ryan Ballengee saying thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.